the overall theme is on the board here. Eavesdropping on the creation, tuning into nature's rebellion before it's too late, listening to the Bible with echo-sensitive ears. I don't know if you can read my writing. And then today, dealing with Genesis 1 and asking the question, are humans a weed species? Where does dominion end and abuse begin? So that's kind of our focus. Now, in other words, we're going to be doing Bible study, but we'll be unashamedly and intentionally focusing on ecological issues as we study the Bible. That doesn't mean that the other things that come out of these texts are not important. They are, but we're simply doing a focus, and then if anything else you want to bring up or talk about, certainly we can do that in this time. Relating to the text as it relates to the care of the earth. Now, each of these ten are self-contained, so you don't have to worry about missing one or making sure you get to all of them or anything. But each one has its own self-contained kind of an approach. I'd like to begin with a little prayer, and for that, I would like hiding under the Bible. Herb Brokering, some of you have heard of Herb Brokering, has this little book called Lord If. It's probably out of print, but it's got some nice little prayers. So I'll probably be reading and using one of his prayers each time as we begin. So let's pray. Lord, if you can make creation in an order so that nature unfolds as by itself and one thing leads into another, then keep me in the unfolding nature of events, the flow of life forms, and in the continuous energy of your creation. Amen. Okay, let's get into this thing. By the way, it's still okay to tell Ole and Lena jokes, isn't it? You heard about Ole was going to do some fishing one day, and so he got out there on the ice, and he was just getting ready to cut this hole in the ice, and he heard this voice saying, "There are no fish here." And so he waited for a minute, and then he couldn't quite figure out where the voice was coming from, and then he got ready again. He thought this must be, couldn't figure this out, so he got ready to cut this hole, and he heard the voice again, "There are no fish here." And he stopped and hesitated and looked around again, and he went back again, getting ready to cut this hole in the ice, and again he heard this voice, "There are no fish here." And finally, Ole asked, "Is that you, God?" And the voice came back, "No, I'm the rink keeper." That's bad. Anyhow, today we have this phenomenon of two sessions going on at 9 o'clock. Usually it's just the Bible study, so we'll be in the other room the rest of the time, if you're here the other times. Today they happen to have a session called Luther the Heretic. So I was wondering if somebody's trying to tell me something. So you have your choice of either Luther the Heretic or the Bible study by Luther in the other room. So anyway, this is the way it is today. There's a bibliography that I've kind of put together. It's in the yellow sheet over there. Both of those sheets are, by the way, you can pick them up if you want to. The white sheet is the outline of the 10 studies that we'll be doing. If you want to keep it all in focus, you're welcome to take one of those. And this yellow sheet is the bibliography. That's
should I pass this around?
Yeah, you can if you'd like. Sure, sure. Thank you. And then this is just the beginning. I mean, there is so much being written, and I really got interested in this about a year ago, and so I've tried to do some research and learn as much as I can in about the last year. I really hadn't really had not done much with this topic before that, and wish I had. But the more I get into it, the more I see that there is. But this is at least some of the things that have been helpful to me and things that I picked up on. That doesn't mean that there isn't a lot more, and we'll get into that. For instance, tomorrow the session has a focus in Genesis 2 and 3, has a focus on ecofeminism. And you could get another bibliography sheet twice that length just on books that are written on that topic, which I hadn't even heard the term a year ago. So it's a rather interesting thing. This is just, again, a general then helpful thing. I found another book after I got here that I wanted to put on the list, but I'll just tell you what it is. It's a book by James Nash called Loving Nature. And I've got a copy of it here. And I noticed they had a lot of copies of this book in the bookstore. There was a professor from Harvard that was here in June and gave some lectures on ecology and theology. And this was his major book that he recommended, and there are lots of them left. And so I picked one up, and I started reading it. It's very readable. It's a very very excellent. It focuses on ethics and love as a focus on dealing with ecology. And again, it's quite readable.
Should we feel free to raise questions?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Okay. Comments? I don't notice anything about here by Native peoples. They're around for 10,000 to 50,000 years.
Oh, yeah.
Living in perfect harmony with nature.
Yeah.
And the great spirit. And,
good point. Good point.
That just comes to the top of my head. It is Mother Earth spirituality.
Okay.
Eagle Man, or Edmagon, is a Lakota. And I spent a one-day workshop with him.
Okay, great. That's the thing about a group like this. We can really teach each other a lot, and I can learn a lot, and I have a lot to learn about this. Let me write this down. Who's the author again?
Eagle Man.
Eagle
Man, and is also known as Ed Maga, A-M-C-G-A, Mother Earth Spirituality.
Mother Earth Spirituality.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that. And then, while we're at it here, are there other books that some of you have run across that are not on this bibliography list that have been really helpful and meaningful to you? And again, like you say, many Native, we need, there could be another whole research into what has been written by Native Americans. That's an excellent thought, yeah. Anything else that could go on here for? From your reading experiences, from your background, we would welcome that. Okay. So anyway, I'd like to take a little bit of time to just say a couple things about some of these books. One of the books is Al Gore's book, Earth and the Balance. I don't know whether you agree with him politically or not. Yeah, he does have a real interest in and has done some stuff on ecology, and it's quite readable. He's got some background in writing skills, in journalism as well as in politics, and has a lot of facts and figures in here that may be helpful too. So, it's one I'd recommend, one of the books I would recommend off this list. Another book is Thomas Berry, The Dream of the Earth. This comes at the whole thing from more of a philosophical, mystical point of view, whereas Earth and the Balance deals with it from scientific and political, especially political.
There's a spiritual aspect to that, too.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I guess I'm assuming that most all these books that we're dealing with here have a element of spirituality and theology and biblical orientation along with it. So
he actually went to divinity school for a while as well as law school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's helpful. I didn't realize that, but certainly it does come out. Yeah. And Dream of the Earth. Thomas Berry is a Catholic priest, American monk. He's a monk, and. The book, this book, of course, which is, comes at this whole thing from a devotional angle. It's called Earth Prayers. That's on the bibliography too. Earth Prayers from Around the World. It's a collection of prayers that come out of Native American, Christian, traditional Western Christian, all sorts of different sources. These Earth Prayers, blessings, benedictions, reflections. So this is a book which comes at ecology from a, maybe from a devotional angle. And if you want something that's written by a conservative, I don't know how many of you have heard of Tony Campolo. He's a guy that writes to the so-called evangelicals, the more fundamentalist conservatives, trying to shake them up and get them going in ecology, and writes in a real popular style. And I'll quote a few things out of there too.
Worshiping nature.
Yeah. How to rescue the earth without worshiping nature? Of course, he's afraid of pantheism. But I don't think this one's in the bookstore. I picked it up back in the Twin Cities. But it's been helpful from the standpoint of taking a topic that is makes good sense and it's logical and put it in a real popular way, a real quick popular way for people to digest. So I'll pick up on that here and there too. This one is Elizabeth Octemeyer's book, Nature, God, and Pulpit. She's got some, she aims at clergy on that one, I suppose, because she got a few sermons in there for them to get some ideas on how to preach in such a way as to use the environmental issues the way they ought to be used in dealing with this stuff.
I always react to this fear of anti-pantheism, fear of pantheism. A God created this universe, so it is pretty sacred if creator of it was God. So
sure.
Anti-polytheism anti-pantheism was kind of anti-nature, anti-creation.
This is right. That's an issue. That's a real important issue in the whole controversy, especially when you're dealing with the evangelicals.
I'm Jewish. I'm a Jewish Christian, and I know Jewish mysticism and the Jewish mystical theology says that the creation is the feminine embodiment of God, the Shekinah.
Uh-huh.
So that's very, very sacred. So you know, kind of the disparagement of the creation kind of shakes me up.
Yeah, he tries to tread the fine line between the danger of disparaging creation and worshiping it in such a way to deal with the evangelicals. I don't know. I'm sure. You probably have some difficulty with his approach on that, although he tried real hard to try to convince people that there's a difference between valuing and worship appreciating and treasuring it and being intimate with it and talking, conversing with nature and being intimate with nature. As over against worshiping it. So I don't know whether that's valid or not. That's
Just as we read a book, I, Francis of Saint Francis of Assisi, how he discovered God through nature. Judaism teaches that's one of four ways to know God, is one of them is through nature.
I don't know how much, I don't know whether he's diametrically opposed to, he talks a lot about St. Francis in here. He does appreciate St. Francis.
That's a different book.
No, I mean, excuse me, this one. How to Rescue the Earth. You'd have to read it to kind of figure out whether he's getting into some ways of thinking about it that are really not sound. I don't know, but he does appreciate St. Francis a lot. He tells a lot of stories about St. Francis. And And this whole business of nature staging a rebellion, that was John Hall's books on the bibliography. He said, if human beings insist upon pressing nature beyond its capacities to produce, if human societies value standards of living more grandiose than their natural habitat can consistently maintain, if for the sake of its own short-term survival, the human species is ready to sacrifice other species and ecological systems on which its long-range survival is dependent, then surely one can expect nature to respond to those inordinate demands in a manner suggestive of rebellion. And so that's where I picked up on that. In Thomas Berry's book, the Dream of the Earth, I'd just like to share a couple lines out of there to give you a feeling for the way he comes at this. His first chapter is called Returning to Our Native Place. We are returning to our native place after a long absence, meeting once again with our kin in the Earth community. For too long we have been away somewhere, entranced with our industrial world of wires and wheels, concrete and steel, and our unending highways where we race back and forth in continual frenzy. And now the world of life, of spontaneity, dawn and sunset, etc., we're coming back to it. He thinks we're coming back to that, to a feeling of intimacy with the Earth community. And he says there's something more here than working out a viable economy, something more than ecology, more even than deep ecology is able to express. It's a sense of presence, a realization that the Earth community is a wilderness community that will not be bargained with, nor will it simply be studied or examined or made an object of in any way, nor will it be domesticated or trivialized, or will it be just something for our vacation indulgence? It's something much, much greater than all of that. And so that's kind of how he comes at this. It's a very neat way that he approaches this whole thing. If you want to do biblical theological stuff, and if you have a lot of money, if you live close to a theological library, you can delve into Klaus Westermann. Klaus Westermann writes commentaries. He's written a commentary on Genesis 1 through 11. And his commentary is probably one of the best around for relating this biblical material to ecology. It just comes out all over the place. And here's a statement that he makes in this commentary. He says that the first page of the Bible speaks about God and the birds and the fish and the forests and the earth. A God who is understood only as the God of humankind is no longer the God of the Bible. You can read a lot of commentaries, that hardly even refer to, commentaries on Genesis 1 hardly even refer to ecology. It's ridiculous. But this one really, he really does that all the way through. And of course, the theme of Holden for this year is what?
Listening to the sacred.
Listening to the sacred. And Scott Hasserud points this out. It's also an act of conversation between ourselves and the creation. It's not just some other kind of thing. Campalo says that there seems to be a conflict between those who emphasize saving souls and those who emphasize saving trees. And this is a ridiculous conflict. So he's trying to address the evangelicals, in a meaningful way here. He says, we need saved people who can live a meaningful life in God's beautiful world of nature, which is yearning to be free from pollution. Let's not confuse evangelism with ecology, but let's also show that true evangelists are also true ecologists. And then another little quote from Campalo here. He says, we Christians can't let this one get away from us. We lost a lot of people because we responded to the civil rights movement too slowly. We lost even more because we said too little too late about the war in Vietnam. At this present time, we can't ignore something that will be vital concern, not only to those whom critics mockingly label eco-freaks, but also to huge masses of people in America and throughout the world.
So
crucial, it's a very, very crucial kind of thing. He's written a lot of books, but he said, this is probably the most important book I've ever written. He says, he writes a lot of books about youth work and about vocation and this sort of stuff, but this one is his thrust into the world of ecology. Well, let me ask you a question. Maybe let's just do this. Let's just divide up into groups of three or four for a couple minutes and just talk about this one. How have you dealt with Christians who seem to be insensitive to ecological issues? How have you witnessed to them, quote unquote? How might you do it better in the future? Let's take about 3 minutes and just kind of cluster up into groups of three or four and just kind of have to converse about that question a little bit. Okay, let's pull back together now. I know you're just getting started, but that's kind of the nature of the thing. Pull back together here, and we'll just continue on now with a look at Genesis 1. Let's turn to our Bibles and open them to Genesis 1. And let's just read through it and get a feeling for this this kind of a liturgy. It's kind of a praise liturgy that comes out of the exile at a time when people needed the comfort and the strength to know that God had some kind of order in the universe and everything was apple cart upset for them in time of the exile, and things had fallen to pieces. They'd lost their institutions. They'd lost their all kinds of things that they lost, and it's thought that this piece, Genesis 1:1 through 2:3, the first creation story, comes out of that time as a way of helping people to get some orientation again, that there really is a God who is all powerful and that there is hope. So we want to always be looking at this from the angle of the fact that there is hope. Our Bible says that there is hope, even though there are many great problems. Let's read it day by day here. Maybe just start over on this side. Whoever can pass if you want to, but there, Bibles are up here, by the way, if you want to grab a Bible. Why don't we start in the back row, okay? Read day one, which is the first five verses.
Okay. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness.
Yeah, through five, one more verse.
God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day.
Okay, thank you. And just go right on around. 6 through 8.
Then God said, let there be Let there be an expanse in the middle of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters. And God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening, and there was morning, the second day.
Okay, thank you. Next one is verses 9 through 13.
Then God said, let the water beneath the sky be gathered into oceans so that the dry land will emerge. And so it was. Then God named the dry land earth and the water seas. And God was pleased. And he said, let the earth burst forth with every sort of grass and seed-bearing plant and fruit trees with seeds inside the fruit, so that these seeds will produce the kind of plants and fruits they came from. And so it was, and God was pleased. This all occurred on the third day.
Okay, thank you. Now verses 14 through 19. Okay.
And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good, and the evening and the morning were the fourth day.
Okay, thank you. And then verses 20 through 23. No, wait, let's see now. Right. 20 through 23, right.
And God said, let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the firmament of the heavens. So God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply in the earth. And there was evening, and there was morning, a fifth day.
Okay, thank you. And now the sixth day is verses 24 through the rest of the chapter. But let's divide it up. Let's one of you read verses 24 through 27.
And God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beast of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image, and the image of God created he him. Male and female created
people. Okay, thank you. And then verses 28 to the end of the chapter.
And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw everything that God had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, a sixth day.
Okay, thank you. And one more here. We have verses.
Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work, which he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it, God rested from all his work, which he had done in creation.
Okay, thank you. Now, we're going to focus for a little bit on verse 28. What does have dominion mean to you? Let's do this again. Let's divide up into these same groups of three or four, and let's talk about this for a few minutes, about 3-4 minutes, and then we'll share this with each other. So divide up into your small groups again and talk about what does have dominion here. God says, have dominion over the creation, over the earth, over all this stuff.
This may be a mistranslation, by the way. This was written in Hebrew, you know.
Okay.
So it may be a mistranslation.
What would be a better translation, you know?
Have stewardship? I don't know.
Okay, why don't you talk about this first in your small groups, and then we'll get together and share it as a large group, okay? It's kind of, we got a few new people. Welcome everybody that's come just in the last few minutes, especially, and everybody else too. But three or four in a group, okay? Or if you want to be five, that's all right, I guess. But whatever. We'll go about 4 minutes. 4 minutes. Okay. I guess interesting insights here. Other thoughts that came out of this for you? Anybody? Share this with the whole group.
Well, I was just saying that the popular interpretation of dominion has been where it's mine.
Ownership.
I'm in charge. I can do with it.
Well, listen,
whatever we feel like, yeah.
Maybe that wasn't so more than in the Middle Ages or something. our form of kind of capitalism is only about, what, 300 years old or so?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is interpreting the Bible for the service of this ideology and so forth.
Very possibly. Very possibly.
We mentioned three different things in our group. First, the old growth forest in the Pacific Northwest, and then the water in Florida, and the water, oh yeah, rivers in Minnesota too are being polluted because people are pushing that mastery to greed.
Uh-huh.
And once you get into greed, there's just doesn't seem to be any limit, and the powers that be are going to be in control. We just kind of didn't know quite how to react to it.
Okay.
We feel frustrated.
We as individuals working against the big, like the sugar cane industry, the big capital farmers,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. It's hard.
Okay.
But you can write letters and do our own part.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I think something else that we fail to do is to try to develop other sources for people to use those byproducts wisely instead of just discarding so much of what we use.
Okay.
That should be, there should be more research and we should be using those things.
Okay. Yeah, and all of this has to do with a more responsible way of dominion, I suppose. Okay, other thoughts here?
Sort of deeper level of interpretation of the five books of Moses, including Genesis, called the Kabbalah, which is a mystical Judaism. I'll have to look into that, how they read that, but that's a mystical interpretation of those things. And for the Kabbalah, the created world is the embodiment of God. So you wouldn't want to fool around with the embodiment of God. But it does seem to indicate that the human beings will be the... We seem to have grown from, being a one among the many animals to having mastery over things,
okay. A basic difference in philosophy then, which is a crucial thing for us here to get back to. Yeah, okay.
And what you had said I thought was so interesting before, the wilderness will not be bargained with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some right.
Environment.
Uh-huh.
So much, and then of course it'll kind of turn on us, I guess you could say.
We can make the conditions on the earth uninhabitable for us, for man, like the ozone layer was going, and then we stopped the production of, beginning to decrease the chlorofluorocarbons, and then they noticed recently that it was reported in the paper that the ozone layer is just beginning to heal itself, like this is a one living being, which the ancient Greeks called the Gaia, Mother Earth, and in contrast to that, our former president mocked Al Gore as the ozone man, so that's something very humorous.
Yeah.
But he was concerned with something that could destroy the ozone layer, then there's no protection against ultraviolet radiation.
Mm.
The tragedy is we don't know how to deal with this in the pulpit.
Our ministers, I don't mean this unkindly, but sometimes I wonder if they're afraid to, because it's such a hot issue, you know, with lots of people, even at churches, you know.
We haven't been trained to do it either. That's the other thing. It's foreign to us. And that's where Elizabeth Achtermeyer tries to do a corrective on that in her
book,
Nature, God, and Pulpit, because she's trying to get clergy to say, here's a text, and here's some important things, and here's how I would preach on it. So she'll give you a sermon on this text, which is very helpful to me because I've been preaching for a long time, and it's a new thing to get into that. Yeah.
I guess the whole point is when I say have dominion, God put me in charge, and so often we forget that I can do something.
Uh-huh.
And I think we need to really emphasize that when you say, what might you do in the future? Just get back to being example, share, and then I am doing what God wanted me to do with dominion.
Okay, yeah, the responsibility and that there's hope, because we can do something, okay.
I've been sharing with people lately when they get down, nothing's happening in the church, I say, we can do something about it. Go back and read your Bible, because the Bible, from page one to the end, tells me how to lead my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for pastors today to preach because we have such an illiterate people out in the pulpit. They don't even know what's in the Bible.
Yeah.
They almost have to preach, and I can see that from what I see my pastor do once in a while. They're giving us a Bible study almost to teach us what's in the Bible. It must be difficult to preach today.
There's a great variety among the people as to where they're at. This is right, yeah. Yeah, and Christianity has often been blamed for abuse of the earth. There's a Time magazine quote from 1989, "The idea of dominion can be interpreted as an invitation to use nature as a convenience," it said in the article. And then there, in the Smithsonian, there was an article a few years ago where Wallace Stegner writes, "Our sanction to be a weed species," that's where I got the idea, "our sanction to be a weed species, living at the expense of every other species and of earth itself, can be found in the command that God gave here." So this guy writing in the Smithsonian puts the blame on the Bible. If it weren't for this dumb Bible, we wouldn't have any problems here. No. But we beg to differ with that and say that it's not the Bible, it's not that, it's how we have misinterpreted the Bible. And this is why we need to do Bible study again to refocus on this sort of thing. And we could talk about what it means to be created in God's image and how that might relate to ecology. And remember that to be, you know, how are human beings unique? We have the ability to foresee the future in a way. We have the ability to foresee our own death. But think about this one. We also have the ability to foresee the death of our species. As a kind of a special ability that we have, and what kind of responsibility does that put upon us if we're created in the image of God? I'm just spinning off some kinds of things. We could talk about Russ Limbaugh for a while.
Let's not.
The one who takes his information from the 2% of scientists that think there's no problem. The other 98% say that we have a serious problem.
Speaking of science, this is obviously not the exactly correspond to the scientific knowledge and account of the creation. How would you? Although the past decades we come to believe in the Big Bang that there was a beginning, 15 billion to 20 billion years ago or something.
Yeah.
But other than that. This is not meant to be a scientific account, is it? Or is
no,
it
this is right. It's a liturgy. It's a liturgy that comes out of the exile, we think, out of the time of the exile when the Jews were in exile in Babylon and everything was chaos again for them. Before that had been order. And they'd had this very orderly, their worship, they had their temple, they had their nation, they had a glorious past. And all of a sudden now everything has gone down the tubes and there they are in exile. And is there any hope? It's believed that this section, this first creation story, comes out of that as a way for the people to celebrate the fact that there is a God who created and that there is a God. And this God has things somehow in order, that things are moving somewhere. All is not lost, that there is hope, and that's the basic purpose of this liturgy that we find in Genesis 1 through verse 2-3. No, in no way, of course, this is one of the mistakes that we've made in the past, is think of this as some kind of a scientific expounding of creation. Does that deal with it?
Yes, but it's saying something. It's a mythopoetic, religious. Maybe a why of creation rather than
what or something. Yeah, the who. You know, who not, it is not meant to tell us how But it talks about the who and the why, the purpose. It's something on faith. It has to do with faith. That's an important thing to recognize in dealing with these creation accounts. Yeah. Want to say some more about that?
Well, I agree with you in that it's the constant needing for new things, and that really is at the root of the ecological problem. If we didn't need all these things, then I think we could, you know, be at a sustainable level. But as long as that's being pushed constantly on TV and radio, and
yeah,
we don't need all those things.
That's the point.
It's not that we don't. It's not that we need them. We're made to feel like we need them.
Yeah. The average middle class American may live like a king did or something in the early Middle Ages, and we probably have more material things than in any other time in history or any other culture in the world, and yet we're not particularly happy people. I have an old teacher, Robert Johnson, who used to be a Benedictine monk, and he's authored He and She, and so he spends a lot of time in India, and there people may average about $200 or $300 a year. If they have a roof over their head and enough food to eat, they're very happy. He found them much happier people with much fewer things than we are, although they...
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I put this one up here. You're really tracking with me, just kind of moving you right along on the schedule here. That's place yourself, this is it comes out of a Native American concept, place yourself 7 generations in the future, and then compose a message that you would send to the present generation about care of the earth. Be specific. That's a little homework for you tomorrow, or for your own use, or for your own satisfaction. If you care to write something and bring it along tomorrow and share it with the rest of us, if you're coming tomorrow, that would be, you know, enrich our session too. So that would be just something else. But before we quit, a couple more things here on this business of the dominion. Somebody has suggested that the task of humans is to have dominion over our dominion. We need to get a leash on that. If you look into the Hebrew words involved here, the commentators at least say that what the concept here is that of a good shepherd, a person who deals with those in charge, over which that shepherd is in charge, in a gentle and responsible way, one who tends and feeds the animals. And of course, in the political arena, the kings of Israel were supposed to be shepherds of Israel, and they're supposed to deal with their people in a kind and responsible and gentle way, to bring to fulfillment what God had intended for them. And also, Christian understanding of dominion must be discerned in the way of Jesus. The one who rules is the one who, what did Jesus say? Serves. Right. So it means servanthood. It's the task of the shepherd not to necessarily, be the CEO and I'm controller of everything, but to lay down his life for the sheep, even. This is an important concept. The concept of dominion, the word for to dominate, for have dominion, is used 19 times. Thank you, by the way, for all your help.
I appreciate that.
I'm supposed to be one in 3 minutes too, but well, I'll be there. The result of all of this of being in dominion, of having dominion, should be shalom. That wonderful concept of peace, which is an important Hebrew concept. It's important also to realize that in Genesis 1, human beings were created on the same day as what? The animals. So it's a way, if you read that, it's a way of saying to us, we are together, we're fellow creatures. It doesn't even say that humans were created on a separate day, right with the rest of them. So that's again something to notice there. Ernest Campbell, who's a very old preacher, I picked up a tape of his. on this topic. He preached a sermon in Genesis 1:28, and his sermon was entitled, Over Nature, Under God. These have to be kept in balance. We have to keep these two in balance. He talks about how Robert Louis Stevenson once came upon a man beating his dog. Stevenson got between the dog and his owner, and the dog owner told him to get out of there. He says, it's not your dog. And Robert Louis Stevenson says, no, it's God's dog, and I'm here to protect him. Over nature, under God. It's the world that God loves, and all of nature awaits the fulfillment of all of this. And we talked about stewardship, what should be our approach. The concept of the steward is a very good one. It's a very important one. The concept of the priest is good, because a priest is one who intercedes for and on behalf of the people. But let's extend that. Not only the people, the creation. We intercede for the whole creation, and we communicate with the whole creation. It isn't just humans. We could talk about another one of our roles. One way that we can respond to this whole thing is as the poet. A poet is a person who tries to put things in a way that will catch people's attention and get them to think about this in new ways. And so that's another one of our roles, as over against ecology and the role of and the care of the creation. And then you can always turn to Thomas Berry, the Dream of the Earth, who comes at this in some other ways, other than just the steward and the priest and the poet, but in ways which describe how we're one with the creation, and there's a whole sense he puts it this way. He says it's a sense of just knowing that we are, I won't read it, that we are intimate with the creation. There's an intimacy that we need to get back to, which is very important. There is hope. Again, we need to emphasize that. The fact that Genesis 1 talks about creation of some order out of chaos. We often feel that this whole thing is just a bunch of chaos, the way it's going for the ecology issues. And our world is in a state of chaos. But God is still God, and God is still with us, and God can create order out of chaos. And so let's not despair. And then one quick final word on, there are three different verses in this section which talk about how God blessed the creation. And this is important too. This is a real note of hope for us, that God will neither abandon the creation nor withdraw the freedom that we have as people. And this theology of blessing is offered as a principle of survival and sanity for the exiles in Babylon. This is something that they needed to hear. And it's also something that's offered for our sanity and our survival. This word of blessing. And blessing is something which, as you know, in the Bible, Old Testament, if God blesses something, you don't take that away. That's there. And that's important for us to grab hold of. God has blessed us and blessed our creation. There's hope there. And God will not abandon. And blessings are things also which we say to each other and we say back to God. God's word does not just stay in our ears, it leaps to our lips, and the proclamation then becomes doxology, and that's why that we sing about it and we share the blessings with one another. We are invited to join the doxology of all of nature, of all the creation. If you read the Psalms, we'll have a special session on the Psalms later on, which deal with that. And this is our hope.